Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 20th day of July, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call, and today is a bit different day in the news. Lots more stuff that seems like usual of late to reaffirm that the people who are running the country, not the elected representatives certainly, not the government that the Constitution once said we were supposed to have, a republic, madam, if you can keep it, and we couldn't. No, something entirely different. They're no longer trying to hide it. That's no longer news. But the evidence that they want to destroy all remaining vestiges of that form of government are increasingly undeniable. Let's start off with a few headlines to make the point. During a congressional hearing, the man, sick, whose only qualification for Secretary of Transportation is what he does in the bedroom, not on the job, Pete Buttigieg, has again come right out and said what we all knew. During a congressional hearing, Buttigieg said that the more pain Americans experience from high gas prices, the more benefit there is for those who want to destroy their ability to move around the country freely, i.e., for those who can access electric vehicles. And guess what, folks? When they get their way and the power grid goes down, you won't be one of them. Quote, "The more pain we are all experiencing from the high price of gas, the more benefit there is for those who can access electric vehicles." To which, correctly, Representative Thomas Massie noted, "The average household in the United States uses 1,870 kilowatt hours per year for air conditioning." Folks, that's just air conditioning alone, and that doesn't include some of us who are in climates that don't need it. "If that average household was to plug in electric cars instead," continues the congressman, "it would take at least four times as much electricity just to charge the average household's cars as they use on air conditioning." And guess what? That power grid capacity, as you're seeing now writ large, does not exist. But don't worry, you were never intended to be able to drive an electric car. That was just a scam. Oh, they do want to control and track your movements, and that part of the plan is for real and right on track. But it's the pain part of the equation that he's talking about that's very, very real and also just exactly as planned.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Censorship, destruction of the rule of law, and of course destruction of everything even remotely scriptural is also a part of the plan. Pink News, an appropriately named LGBTQ++ so-called media outlet, has praised Reddit for deciding to censor the term groomer because it describes exactly what they intend to do to young prepubescent individuals, because they describe the term groomer as an anti-LGBTQ+ slur, and they're calling on other socialist media platforms to cave in as well and also ban the hateful phrase. Kind of makes your host wonder what term is next on the banned and censored list. Will it be pedophilia or bestiality? Oh yeah, and they don't want you talking about transgenderism as being a mental illness of any sort, and they arguably never even knew what gender dysphoria was to begin with, or to even be allowed to quote the suicide rates among so-called transgender people who later wake up for real and realize they've made the biggest mistake of their lives. Working to prevent suicides is also, obviously, hateful. On then to another story of what was once the U.S. military, where the Air Force seems to have said, the hell with a federal judge and any ruling that prevents us from doing what we intend to do, which is destroy the Air Force, and is pressing ahead with discharges and other disciplinary action against good airmen who knew better than to take the Zyklon B injection and refused. On July 14th of this year, Judge McFarland from the Southern District of Ohio ordered a temporary injunction against the Air Force, preventing any unit within that department of the Air Force from discharging or conducting punitive actions against any service member who has applied for a religious accommodation from the COVID-1984 vaccine, which isn't a vaccine, certainly isn't truly approved, nor can they be ordered to take it. But the Air Force seems to have said, the heck with that, we've got a military service to destroy. And as Tucker Carlson pointed out on his show late last week, when he talked to Master Sergeant Nick Kupper, this is not an isolated incident either. Related story. Seems like the U.S. Congress doesn't really care about the Constitution either. Senator Rand Paul on Tuesday, according to Steve Watson and Summit News, warned that the Senate shockingly, as he put it, rejected his efforts to reaffirm the Constitution when it comes to declarations of war, which, of course, if you've been paying attention, hasn't actually happened since the day after December 7th, 1941, noting that NATO does not have the authority, at least not really, to supersede Congress or the U.S. Constitution. Paul's comments came after the Senate Foreign Relations Committee backed the accession of Finland and Sweden into NATO ahead of a full vote coming up in the Senate on that expansion, the first of its kind in three decades, which could happen next week and will probably be yet another major straw on the broken back of a camel heading roughshod into World War III. Since Russia has warned for a long time that the move will lead to further confrontation. While other members of the committee verbally voted with either a yes or no, Rand Paul voted a neutral present and proposed an amendment that would emphasize that only the United States Congress has the constitutional authority to declare war. And shockingly, he said, that affirmation was immediately rejected by the Senate traitors. And let's not forget for a minute, folks, that this is the same Congress that seemed poised to approve the NDAA containing the Shift for Brains provision, a.k.a. House Bill 4350, with that literally traitorous amendment to remove domestic operations against U.S. citizens from any oversight in that same Congress. And here's the irony in that. The smokescreen here is that you think Schiff is only trying to cover up whatever the military was up to on January 6th and why they allowed the coup to take place. And that debacle in Afghanistan, too. They want to cover that up. But oh no, that was just the beginning. There's a whole lot more. And the intent here is to make sure you never hear about any of it and that there's no oversight whatsoever. Because the real treason is to use the U.S. military, domestically, on U.S. soil, the founders called it a standing army, by the way, against the American people. And here's the kicker. If you don't like it, or if anybody in the military doesn't like it, or anybody actually honors that oath that they took to the Constitution, as opposed to the dictator-in-chief, well, they're an extremist insider threat. Und ja, we know what that means. Those who ignore the lessons of history are absolutely condemned to repeat it. From there, let's go to the continuing, well-planned and well-executed economic meltdown and global systemic destruction of the almighty fiat dollar. This piece from Zero Hedge says, existing home sales in the U.S. have plunged in June as, I hope you're sitting down, affordability has collapsed. On the heels of ugly home builder sentiment, it begins, and amid tumbling single-family home starts and permits, analysts expected existing home sales to extend their recent decline, with maybe a 1.1% month-over-month drop in June. They were right in direction, but really wrong when it comes to magnitude, because existing home sales slumped 5.4% month-over-month in June. It's a collapse, and that's the fifth straight month of existing home sales declines. Home sales now are down a stunning 14.2% year over year. And as NAR chief economist Lawrence Young put it, both mortgage rates and home prices have risen too sharply in too short a span of time. We'll follow that up today with a couple of comments from arguably the best author ever to write about the Federal Reserve, G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, who says that, clearly, the Federal Reserve is the cause of inflation. When you have a central bank that creates as much money as it wants to, it's a scam. And he contends that the Federal Reserve today is intentionally trying to drive down the value of the U.S. dollar in an effort to transition to what they planned for so long, the cashless and completely controllable monetary system. Describing the unholy alliance, the public-private partnership between Big Brother and Big Banksters, he explained in an interview with Stansbury Research that financial institutions work hand-in-hand with the government in order to achieve full control of purchasing power, and he calls it a banker's dream, a cashless society. Scripture, of course, calls it the mark of the beast. This next story comes via Technocracy News and other websites, by Dr. Marty McCary of John Hopkins School of Medicine and Dr. Tracy Beth Hoag, an epidemiologist with the Florida Department of Health, who warned that U.S. so-called, get this irony, public health agencies aren't, and this is a real shocker, oh yeah, following the science, say any number of officials who find that they're being silenced for daring to point that out. The calls and text messages it begins are relentless. On the other end are doctors and scientists at the top levels of various health agencies, including the NIH, FDA, and CDC. They're variously frustrated, exasperated, and alarmed about the direction of the agencies to which, up until now at least, they've devoted their careers. Said one, quote, it's like a horror movie I'm being forced to watch, and I can't close my eyes. This from a senior FDA official who lamented that people are getting bad advice, and we can't say anything, unquote. That particular FDA doctor, they note, was referring to two recent developments inside the agency. First, how, with no solid clinical data, and in fact, folks, it's closer to the exact opposite of that, the agency authorized the COVID Zyklon B poke, not vaccines, for infants and toddlers, including those who already had COVID, which is not just medical malpractice, it's arguably aggravated assault. And second, the fact that just months before that, the FDA bypassed their own external experts to authorize the deadly booster shots for young children. That doctor says the piece is hardly alone. At the NIH, doctors and scientists complain to these two authors about low morale and lower staffing. The NIH's Vaccine Research Center, SICK, has had many of its senior scientists leave over the last year, including the director, deputy director, and chief medical officer. Quote, they have no leadership now. Suddenly there's an enormous number of jobs opening up at the highest level positions, said one NIH scientist. And here comes a disclaimer. The people who spoke to us, they said, agreed only on condition of anonymity, citing fear of, oh yeah, guess what, professional repercussions. Or perhaps, in this environment, worse. The CDC, they say, has experienced a similar exodus. Quote, there's been a large amount of turnover. Morale is low, said one high-level official at the Center for Death and Control. Things have become so political, so what are we there for? Another scientist at the CDC told us, I used to be proud to tell people I worked at the CDC. Now I'm embarrassed, unquote. And you know what, folks? Sad as that might be, he ought to be. But why are they embarrassed, say the authors? In short, bad science. The longer answer, that the heads of these agencies are using weak or flawed data, or your host will put one more thing in there they won't come right out and say yet, they're lying outright through their damnable, bribable, coercible teeth, to, quote, make critically important public health decisions. And that such decisions are being driven by what's politically palatable to people in Washington or to the Biden regime, and they have a myopic focus on one virus instead of overall health. And again, arguably, all of that is an understatement, but at least it's encouraging to see somebody in the medical profession come right out and admit what everybody knows, and that's why they ought to be so embarrassed, or worse, indicted. Nowhere, though, has this problem been more clear or the stakes higher, say the authors, than when it comes to official public health policy regarding children and COVID. First, they demanded that young children be masked in schools. On this score, the agencies were wrong. And then again, that's too charitable. Compelling studies later found schools that masked children had no different rates of transmission, and for social and linguistic development, children need to see the faces of others. All I can add is, duh, and you would have thought that would have been obvious to anybody with half a brain, which pretty well eliminates most so-called public health officials, at least those that didn't have the good sense to resign 2 years ago. Well, anyway, say the authors, next came school closures. The agencies were wrong again, and catastrophically so. Poor and minority children suffered learning loss with an 11-point drop in math scores alone and a 20% drop in math pass rates. There are dozens of statistics of this kind. And then they ignored natural immunity. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Again, the vast majority of children have already had COVID, even if many of them didn't really even notice the effects. But it's made no difference in the blanket mandates for schools and childhood vaccines. And now, by mandating vaccines and boosters for healthy young people, with no strong supporting data, let's be honest, folks, with no actual data at all except for the fact that it kills them, these agencies are only further eroding public trust. You see the problem with this piece? They're on track, but they're understating the evil. Still, though, folks, I'm doing the story because it's a very important piece, and it's better late than never. One CDC scientist, they write, told us about her shame and frustration about what happened to American children during the plandemic. They spelled it wrong. Quote, CDC failed to balance the risks of COVID and other risks that come from closing schools. Mental health exacerbations were obvious early on, and those worsened as the guidance insisted on keeping schools virtual. CDC guidance worsened racial equity for generations to come. It failed this generation of children, unquote. And again, true, but a gross understatement. It's trying to kill them, folks. An official at the FDA put it this way. I can't tell you how many people at the FDA have told me I don't like any of this, but I just need to make it to my retirement, unquote.
So this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause.
Or with the quiet acquiescence of Nazi prison camp guards and public health officials, who all just want to make it to retirement. Right now, they say, and this is without question correct, internal critics of these agencies are focused on one issue above all. Why, oh why, did the FDA and the CDC issue strong blanket recommendations for COVID vaccines in children? I'd say the answer is obvious. They want them dead. And the facts, the truth, and science have nothing to do with it. But let's see what the authors say. 3 weeks ago, the CDC vigorously recommended the mRNA COVID Zyklon B injections for 20 million children under the age of 5. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, may her name be forgotten, director of the Center for Death and Control, declared that the mRNA COVID vaccines, sick, should be given to everyone 6 months or older because they are, say it with me, folks, and try not to throw up, safe and effective. The trouble is, this sweeping recommendation was based on, they say, extremely weak, inconclusive data provided by Pfizer and Moderna. And of course, the real truth is, they hid the really damning data that shows just how deadly these things really are, and the other nasty and often permanent side effects. And I'm going to skim over some of this because you've heard it all before, but at least it helps make their case. Start with Pfizer, they say. Using a 3-dose vaccine in 992 children between the ages of 6 months and 5 years, Pfizer found no statistically significant evidence of vaccine efficacy, and so forth and so on. And what they're ignoring is that they did find, and then hid, significant evidence of, well, let's just say, lots, far worse stuff. Some of it having nothing to do with COVID, but certainly having a lot to do with dead kids, sterile kids, and disabled kids. Still, though, referring to the so-called efficacy of Pfizer's vaccine in healthy young children, one high-level CDC official, whose expertise is in the evaluation of clinical data, joked thusly, "You can inject them with it or squirt it in their face, and you'll get the same benefit," unquote. And let's be honest, folks, you're better off squirting it in their face. Unless it blinds them, they probably won't suffer nearly as badly as those who got it stuck into their bodies. Moderna's results, and I won't go through the details, weren't much better. And then there's the matter of how long the vaccine gives so-called protection. At best, we know from data in adults, they say, it's generally a matter of months, but we have no such data for young children. Quote, "It seems criminal that we put out the recommendation to give mRNA COVID vaccines to babies without good data. We really don't know what the risks are yet, so why push it so hard?" said a CDC physician. Another high-level FDA official felt the same way. Quote, "The public has no idea how bad this data really is. It would not pass muster for any other authorization," unquote. And that, folks, says it all. And yet, still, the FDA and CDC pushed it through. This slap in the face of science may explain, say the authors, why only 2% of parents of children under the age of 5 have chosen to inject them with the deadly, damnable stuff. Now, the COVID vaccine, they write, and 40% of parents in rural areas say their pediatricians did not recommend the COVID vaccine for their child. I'm going to ask it, what's wrong with the other 60%? This isn't the first time, though, that COVID vaccine recommendations based on scant evidence have been pushed through these, and I'll say it again, satanically evil, unconstitutional, and downright deadly, did I miss anything? Three-letter agencies. Most recently, back in May, the lack of clinical evidence for booster shots in young people created a stir at the Federal Death Agency. The White House, though, promoted it hard even before FDA regulators, sick, had even seen any data. Once they saw the data, they weren't impressed. Oh, yeah? It showed no clear benefit against severe disease for people under 40. And it says the FDA's two top vaccine regulators, Dr. Marion Gruber, director of the FDA's vaccine office, and her deputy director, Dr. Philip Krause, quit the agency last year over political pressure to authorize so-called vaccine boosters in young people. After their departure, she wrote scathing commentaries explaining why the data did not support the broad booster authorization, arguing in the WAPO that, quote, "the push for boosters for everyone could actually prolong the pandemic," unquote. And hey, do you think maybe that's the real point? Citing concerns that boosting based on an outdated variant could be, and is intended to be, I keep saying this, folks, this is so blatantly obvious, it's funny how they understate the case. Anyway, pushing these boosters could be, quote, counterproductive, said a CDC scientist to the authors. It felt like we were a political tool. do you think? That insider, they note, went on to explain that he got vaccinated early on, but chose not to get boosted based on the data. Ironically, that same person was unable to go on a trip with a group of parents because proof of being poisoned, boosted, was required. Quote, I asked for someone to show me the data. They said the policy was based on the CDC recommendation. Unquote. And one NIH scientist told us there's a silence, an unwillingness for agency scientists to say anything, even though they know that some of what's being said out of the agency is absurd, unquote. I can't emphasize it strongly enough, folks. These people, in keeping silent, are culpable, and they are, in fact, evil. And they deserve the shame that should be heaped upon them. And, of course, when they get to their, let's put it this way, eternal reward, they're going to have a far worse question to answer, which makes these quotes really damning in hindsight. That was a theme we heard over and over again, say the authors. People felt like they couldn't speak freely, even internally within their agencies. Quote, you get labeled based on what you say. If you talk about it, you will suffer, I'm convinced, said an FDA staffer. Another person at that same agency added, if you speak honestly, you get treated differently, unquote. Well, you know what, folks? That's better than what they're doing to those dupes who are being destroyed because of their silence. Write the authors, so they remain quiet, speaking to each other in private or in text groups on Signal. One subject these doctors and scientists feel passionately about, but they feel they cannot bring up, is natural immunity. Why, they wonder, are we insisting on immunizing children who've already got some immunity to the disease due to having contracted COVID? I'll say it again. The answer is obvious. They want them dead. And you people think that these agencies are doing something different than what they really are. As of February, 75% of children in the U.S. already had natural immunity, note the authors, from a prior infection. It could easily be over 90% of children in today's society, given how ubiquitous Omicron has been since then. The CDC's own research shows that natural immunity is better, gee, do you think, than vaccinated immunity, or what they're calling it. And a recent New England Journal of Medicine study from Israel has questioned the benefits of vaccinating previously infected persons.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Mrs. Blue.
I guess.
Many countries have long credited natural immunity towards vaccine mandates, but not the United States. And you know why, folks. There's another agenda. In this, the leaders, sick, of these so-called American health agencies made the U.S. an international outlier in how it treats children. And again, I'll say it, there's an obvious reason. Sweden never offered vaccinations to children under 12. Finland limits COVID vaccines to children under 12 who are at high risk. The Norwegian Institute of Public Health has appropriately stated that, quote, some children may benefit, but previous infection offers as good a protection as the vaccine against reinfection, and so forth and so on. It's statistically impossible, say the authors, for everyone who works inside of our health agency, SICK, to have 100% agreement about such a new and naughty subject. But the fact that there's no public dissent or debate can only be explained by the fact that they are, or at least they feel they are, being muzzled. It's an ancient moral requirement, conclude the authors, of our profession to speak up when we believe questionable treatments are being proposed. It's also good for the public. Imagine, for example, a world in which those scientists who suggested masking for children in school lockdowns were worse for public health were not smeared, but instead debated. Yeah, isn't that amazing? Not in America post-2020. And here's their bottom line. The official public health response to COVID has undermined the public's belief in public health itself. Again, a gross understatement. This is a terrible outcome with potentially disastrous consequences. Yeah, perhaps not as bad, though, as the mass execution of so many people. Back to the two doctors, though. For one thing, because of these sloppy and politicized policies, we run the risk of parents rejecting routine vaccines for their children. You'd have to be stupid at this point to allow these satanic hosts to put anything into your children, folks. Even if we think or know that they're effective, safe, and life-saving. The leaders of the CDC, FDA, and NIH should welcome internal discussion, even dissension, based on the evidence. And silencing physicians, they say, is not following the science. Less absolutism and more humility by the men and women running our public health agencies would go a long way in rebuilding public trust. No, folks, what would rebuild public trust is a few trials followed by executions for mass murder. And nothing short is ever going to make a real difference. Nor should it. This kind of power should never, and in fact really never was, constitutionally anyway, put in these agencies to begin with. And therein lies a big part of the problem. Lord Acton had it right. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And what's being done has nothing to do with fostering public health. And your host can't help but suggest that as people begin to wake up to something that simple, that obvious, the rest of the pieces, too, ought to begin to fall into place, hopefully in time for some of them to survive. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.